All right, and it says recording. Thank you so much for the invitation, and I'm putting my notes together. I'm actually going to start my timer here and keep my eye on it, because tangents and asides are my favorite way of lecturing. but I think what motivated me to come back to Canada was at Dartmouth. So let me take a step back. So my mother was born and raised in England, in Devon. And my father is a Temiagam Anishinaabe from Lake Temagami, Northern Ontario. And so I've grown up in a household that sort of in our everydayness, unquestionably embraced values that were both Indigenous and Western European, and quite often not distinguishing which was which. So it made sense in a way that I've always seen myself as a kind of a middle ground, middle of the road kind of person politically, and also in terms of trying to think through issues around in Indigenous politics. Some of you might be interested, my sort of philosophical influences on the Indigenous side are some elders and Anishinaabe elders, of course, and Bill Reed, who's a Haida sculptor. But on the philosophical side, it's really the later Wittgenstein and the culture of sort of political theorists that have sort of used his work. What has happened is, I think my work has evolved where to address one question, which seems to be front and center for me right now, which is, how do we listen to Indigenous peoples in and on their own terms? And philosophically, this is a very difficult question. My community had a land claim that went to the Supreme Court. We had a particular argument that I thought was pretty straightforward. It drew from our Dodem system. It drew from traditional ways of understanding our relationships to land and so on. But by the time those explanations got into court, they were reconfigured, and the language and the normative language that they had to use to make their arguments was substantially different. And in fact, I would argue the decisions were made using an entirely different framework, logical framework, and from a completely different way of understanding the world. So all of this in the last couple of years, so I came here in 2019, really changed. I don't know how much I should get into this, but I was offered a research chair at Queen's Law School. This is once I started at U of T. And I was happy to come to U of T, and I didn't really want to leave, but this was a really good opportunity because it was an endowed chair in Indigenous law. And so I was interested in it, but U of T made a retention offer, and a retention offer that I obviously accepted. And I think one of the questions that the chairs said to me was, what do you want to do? What is it that you really want to do? And let us know. And that led to my current sort of resituating my teaching responsibilities and duties at U of T. So when I joined in 2019, one of the committees that I was on is called the DeCanal Working Group on Indigenous Teaching and Learning. And we advise the Dean's Office and the President's Office on Indigenous issues. So in some ways, these courses are response to their demands. I can actually, I think I could probably post the PDF, can't I, Jody? I can do that later. But I can also make sure you have it so you can forward it to people. It's worth reading, especially the executive summary. And so in in thinking about what it is that I really wanted to do, and taking this theme of listening to Indigenous peoples in and on their own terms, one of the problems that I found at Dartmouth was that we could, in the best case scenario, we want to take our students to the land, the best way to endure, the best way to learn Indigenous ways of understanding, Indigenous knowledge, is two things. One is to be on the land itself and to be taught by the relevant people. And the term that I use to characterize these people are medicine people and traditionalists who live on the land. And I am a kind of, I'm not a medicine person. So there are many things in the classroom that I can't teach because it's not my place. So it's always been a problem in a place like Dartmouth, especially, is how then do we bring these Indigenous ways of knowing, Indigenous ways of thinking into the classroom? Has always been a kind of problem. One of the things that we did, we designed a summer course and these kinds of things where we could do special courses to take students out on the land or get involved with other communities and so on. So in coming to U of T, first of all, the University of Toronto actually has 46,000 Indigenous people in Toronto. It's, in some ways, it's the largest reservation in Canada. There are a number, when we do the land acknowledgement, we have the, there's the Haudenosaunee people or the Iroquois Confederacy, which are, you know, come across Northern New York and sweep up into Ontario and, you know, the Six Nations, for example, is part of that confederacy. We have the Anishinaabe Confederacy and or Anishinaabe Nation, which is the same sort of just north of there, sweeping across Ontario, right up north, all the way across Western Ontario, right out into to Wisconsin and Minnesota. And it's a huge, it's a huge nation. So we have a meeting place traditionally with the treaties and that go back for hundreds of years. So Toronto or Tokoronto is, has been traditionally a meeting place, an area where several Indigenous nations, the Treaty of Fort Niagara in 1764, which is a really important treaty, was signed close by, and it, it sort of it brought in this sort of area as well. And so coming to University of Toronto is already has a very strong Indigenous presence. So, so I decided that I wanted to teach three courses. And the first course is a pretty straightforward course. It's Indigenous politics in Canada. It's meant to be taught in a classroom. It's a very high enrollment. It has 250 students. It presents a kind of genealogy of Aboriginal, the Aboriginal Indigenous Canadian state relationship, really from the white paper in 1969. But then the examples I choose in the course are all examples of what Indigenous peoples bring to this relationship. So I try to look at the relationship from an Indigenous perspective, and then we cover various perspectives through that genealogy. For example, and I'll come back to this one in the next course, I'm going to talk about the Wet'suwet'en. We're all familiar with what's going on in Wet'suwet'en politics. Well, it has a long history, and it started in some sense in a very important decision in 1997 called the Delgamuukw decision. There's been fallout from that. There are a number of various people involved in this decision that have shaped the nature of the relationship, but also Canadian policy, and in particular, Aboriginal rights are protected in the Canadian Constitution, second part of the Constitution. Section 35 says the Aboriginal and treaty rights of the Aboriginal peoples of Canada are hereby recognized and affirmed. And then a court, of course, Supreme Court has tried to attach meaning to that since 1982. So that's this first course, is that sort of type of course. I would love to turn that into a MOOC which is a massive online course to go beyond the university, especially if it could involve communities participating. I, along with a few other people, a couple of my colleagues that are also recent hires, are thinking about how we bring our teaching from the classroom out into, in particular, Indian country itself. So that's one course. Now, the second course, and this is the one I think I've spent most of my time on, because I think it's really, I've got 10, 15 minutes. I think this is this seminar, or what I call tentatively the Indigenous Research Consortium, is a kind of course that, first of all, it cuts across political science. It could really go political science, philosophy, Indigenous studies, and law. So there are four departments that could be involved in putting together this course, which in some ways focuses on Indigenous politics, but it also focuses on other Indigenous issues as well. I should also say that, and this is a great that I'm talking about this, because I'd love to hear some of your ideas, especially for some of you who've been at the university for a long time. So we, because they're a small committee of people that I'm getting involved, are planning this research consortium and just starting, because the first iteration is not until the fall of 2023. So we have a lot of time to plan and do this properly. So I'm really in this kind of listening mode right now, and just trying to put some ideas together with other people. So here's the motivation behind it. One thing I've noticed in teaching Indigenous issues in the university classroom, part of the problem is, well, I've already mentioned, how do we understand Indigenous people's relationships to land in a classroom? We can't take our students to the land. Well, we can, but not in most classrooms on campus. So what kinds of things can we do to get around this as an issue, or to make this issue central to our pedagogy? And one of the things that would frustrate me in teaching courses, so it's at Dartmouth for 22 years, and is when you bring somebody in to speak, you normally bring in a speaker. They come in and they give their talk or a class lecture, and there's, you know, a dinner maybe or a lunch, and there's hardly ever enough time to really sit with people. They don't have the time as well, especially if it's another academic. And yet Indigenous issues, I think, are complex because they cut across various disciplines. I just named four: philosophy, political science, law, and Indigenous studies. That sort of context, intellectual concept, context, pedagogical context, is what is going to shape this research consortium. And I'm going to add a few other entities to that as well. But so the idea then is, how do we listen to Indigenous peoples in and on their own terms? Well, one thing we do, and the way that I think the seminar will be divided, is into modules for several weeks. And let's use the Wet'suwet'en as an example. So if we're going to study the Wet'suwet'en politics and pipeline politics, then the idea would be to bring several people involved or from the Wet'suwet'en community. So there's a Delgamuukw case. So there's, for example, Angela Sterrett, who handled their case in the Supreme Court. So you can have the people involved in the court case and the fallout from that. You have medicine people, Frida Husson, who has already expressed some interest in participating. Medicine people, there are leaders, there are scholars, community people. And what the idea that I'm thinking of is that we bring these people together as a small group around this issue of Wet'suwet'en politics, and we bring them to campus. But we're not just bringing them into a seminar. We're not just bringing them to the University of Toronto. We're bringing them to an Indigenous territory, and Indigenous territories, plural. So there's a local community that they will also be coming into. And a big part of this, and I really learned this from spending some time with Maori people in New Zealand, where protocols and diplomacy are very important in exchanges of knowledge and in bringing different nations together. And of course, the Haudenosaunee and Anishinaabe also have these traditions that, when you see going back to the Treaty of 1764, were really important and central to holding together the larger community and bringing together the various participants in a particular issue, in this case, signing a treaty. So I want to renew, possibly even invent some new practices, diplomatic protocols around bringing Indigenous peoples, Indigenous from other communities, for particular purpose, a diplomatic purpose of exchanging their ways of knowing, talking about this issue, but it's coming into the Indigenous community as a whole, to the Haudenosaunee Nation, to the Mississauga Nation, or the Hiawatha Nation, or whoever is relevant for this particular issue, if not everyone. And then, of course, there are also entities at the university that, beyond the departments, beyond the seminar, there are, for example, students. They never seem to have enough time to spend with students. So they wouldn't come just for a day. They would come for a week, if not longer. And there would be a kind of visit, of which the seminar would play a central role in this. But the seminar is also connected out into the community, of which the students in the seminar would be get involved in the success of this kind of endeavor. There are students at the First Nations House. There are students in other classes, other faculty members. There are now the director of Indigenous initiatives and partnerships. There's the Decanal Committee working group that I already mentioned. So there are these young, they've only been around for a couple of years, these entities that are trying to facilitate Indigenous ways of knowing and thinking, Indigenous knowledge, into how that could play out and how that can be brought into the community in a way that does justice to what Indigenous peoples are saying, back to the sort of broader theme of listening to Indigenous peoples in and on their own terms. So, and then another thing that's changed in the last, since 2019, is my colleague, Uahekea Male in political science, has just received funding to start an Indigenous politics lab, and which will be issues driven, but it will be an actual physical place on campus for Indigenous students and faculty to center on particular political issues. And so we're looking to find ways of connecting this lab with this seminar. There's also the Native Canadian Center of Toronto, which is on Spadina and Bloor, which is formerly the Friendship Center. And they are connected into the Indigenous community in Toronto in ways that I think we can facilitate these kinds of relationship. And then, of course, there's places like the Yellowhead Institute at Ryerson, if I could say the former, no, Ryerson ex-university. So the idea then is that we bring Indigenous communities, so to speak, to campus in a kind of diplomatic context where we share ways of learning and ways of knowing that really become situated onto the land itself, of which the seminar is an important intellectual part of that. But it's not the only reason. It's not the only way that Indigenous peoples share knowledge. And because it's about building relationships. And I think that the virtue of this is that we build stronger relationships with our local communities. We start to look at ancient diplomatic protocols that have kind of been set aside and are still used, but used in very formal sorts of settings. And we can reinvent those in a kind of academic, intellectual exchanges of knowledge and ways of knowing. There's a ceremonial kind of aspect to that that I think Indigenous communities are really longing for, that kind of respect. And I'm already running out of time, aren't I? So let me connect that though to this idea of reconciliation, because as a professor, I think this is an institutional direction, right? That reconciliation between Indigenous peoples and the Canadian state, which is so driven by public policy, and it's so driven by a particular way of understanding the nature of the relationship, that it makes it difficult to get Indigenous peoples on board. They'll only come on board up to a certain point. They've been given lip service on the forms of recognition that they are demanding, in a way, asserting in the context of the on-the-ground political relationships. I'm talking about the one dictated by the Indian Act and Section 35, and now UNDRIP, the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. But I think a way into that form of reconciliation is that we need to re-examine, we need to critique this, the nature of this nation-to-nation relationship, in a way that's, it's being characterized as a treaty relationship. Aboriginal rights are a constitutional right in Canada, but I think the way that I see the politics, and this is related to my pedagogy and to, I think, the success of bringing Indigenous peoples to, Indigenous ways of knowing into the classroom, which means into the university, which then can play out in facilitating and nurturing relationships between various parts of this enormous, I came from Dartmouth, my gosh, a little tiny place, to this enormous institution. I see this from an Indigenous perspective as a kind of spiritual endeavor, because it places Indigenous people's relationships to land as front and centered into how we understand their ways of knowing. And that is what's being, as their voices, as their collective voices, is being brought into the classroom, it's being brought into the institution and into the local communities. And where this connects, and I realize I'm throwing a lot at you, especially if you're not familiar with these issues, but where this connects is, I believe what we're seeing in the politics, both within the legal political practices of the state, but within the legal political practices of Indigenous communities, especially traditional ones, is we're trying to facilitate, we're trying to make room for Indigenous law as a third order of law in Canada. And I think that's the level, right, that we need to think about reconciliation as a sort of a vision for us to attain, is that form of deep respect of not just Indigenous ways of thinking, but what flows out of that, which are rational frameworks for how we should treat the land, or having a particular voice in a mining relationship with a mining company, and so on, that the rootedness of that form of what I would call recognition, I suppose, is deeply rooted in a respectful relationship. And I could go back to the TRC recommendations maybe in the Q&A. So I guess the way that I'll wrap things up, since I threw a lot at you there, a third course is somewhat related to this, but it's a course on Anishinaabe ways of understanding, Anishinaabe knowledge that will be taught on the homelands, which are called the Nidaki Menan, for my own community in Lake Temagami. So students would go in the summer, although maybe the winter might work, but the summer, and actually, so the first iteration is a 2-week course. Once again, these are all ideas that are just percolating and haven't come to fruition. But our land claim involved 3 levels of court decisions. We would spend some time unpacking that, but in the process, meet the people who were involved, and then talk to the medicine people who provided the kind of understanding and framework for the Anishinaabe argues and the arguments that they took to court in their oral testimonies. And then the second week, we would actually take students out onto the land, in particular the waterways, because that's how Anishinaabe people think about a concept such as ownership. And the Dodem system, traditional system, is how water moves across the land. And to be actually with medicine people to learn these kinds of medicines on the land itself and weave that into our stories that found themselves in a court of law. So that's the other course that I'm working on. I think actually I'm good. I can stop there unless there, and then answer some questions. I hope that was somewhat clear. I hope the one thing that comes through is my enthusiasm, because I'm really quite excited about this. And there, I want to get as many people involved as I can. And so far, there's been a lot of support from some really impressive people. So I'll stop there. Thanks.